Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What did it take to turn the never-produced movie idea of legendary French actor and director Jacques Tati into a full-length animated feature? Directed by the French writer and animator Sylvain Chomet, The Illusionist was nominated first for a Golden Globe Award and now for an Oscar, but it tells a very different sort of story than its child-centered Hollywood-produced competition. The film opens this week at the Angelica Film Centers in Dallas and Plano. Fiona Hall was production manager, and Justin Hall worked as an animator on the project. And since they recently moved from Edinburgh, Scotland to East Dallas, we're able to talk to them about it right here in our studios. Fiona and Justin, welcome to Think and welcome to Dallas.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So the original idea for this film was Jacques Tati's own. And for people not familiar with his career, can you tell us a little bit about his life?
Okay. So Jacques Tati was a kind of equivalent of Charlie Chaplin figure. His films are silent, mostly silent. They're considered the best in French history, and they're often quite slow moving, but they're just very intricate and just quite elaborate films. His main character is someone called Monsieur Hulot, and that is just it was originally. Mr. Bean's character was taken from Monsieur Hulot, so it's got a long history, the Jacques Tati films, and he's just a fabulous filmmaker, of the stature of Charlie Chaplin, that kind of thing in France.
So the idea for this film was deeply personal to him, and it's interesting that he had the idea in the late 50s and never, although he lived till 1982, never actually produced it himself.
That's right, and it's considered to be a film that was so personal to him that he didn't really want to make it. That was certainly one of the things that Sylvain picked up on when he read the script, that it was about the end of a life. And originally in Tati's career, he had worked as an illusionist. So it was kind of too close to the bone, because the film is about an aging illusionist whose career is dying, and it's the end of an era. So it was too close to home for Tati, I think. I think it was too much about his life, and also about the relationship with his daughter, which was, the film is possibly about his estranged daughter as well. So there were so many personal tones in there that it was, you know, maybe just a too difficult film to make. And in the end, he made another film, a very famous film called Playtime, instead of making The Illusionist. So, you know, it's just a kind of, it's good on one side because he didn't make it, but, because we got to make it. So, yeah.
I think something that people will notice, first of all, the film is just exquisitely beautiful. It is just unbelievable to look at. Justin, for you as an animator, the idea of doing a film that we should say has no real dialogue. There are a few mumbled words here and there in three different languages, but you could speak Chinese and understand it just as well. It must be exciting to think people have to watch the images really carefully. They're not clued in by what's happening. They can't use their ears for this.
No, that's right. And I think, especially because it's 2D hand-drawn animation, it puts even more pressure on you, because it's such a difficult art to hand-draw the animation. And it was literally pencil on paper, frame by frame. There's some CG work in there, but it's all very much background and incidental to the story, that everything is told hand-drawn characters. And like you say, there's no dialogue, so it's everything about the character that has to drive the story. Expressions, mannerisms, emotion, all has to come out of the artwork. And that's just, I think that's the great challenge as well of 2D animation.
Maybe you can both talk about this. And Fiona, as production manager, you hired everyone who worked on the film, and Justin, you were part of the team. How do a team of animators come together and assign who's going to do what? I know there are lead animators on particular characters. Can you both give some insight into that?
Sure. So it is a difficult process, because especially with something hand-drawn, you have to get the feel of the character but universally. So everybody has to draw the same line. So
is there like a test?
Yeah. So everybody who we hired, we didn't do a formal interview as such, but everybody had to send in their work. And we had people from who'd worked on Disney to people who were straight out of college. And we were asking for something that was so unique that we needed them to do a test of our characters. So everybody that worked on the movie either came to Edinburgh or we went to them. We did a tour of Europe to find people on the movie. But we were testing them for their line quality. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like a very bizarre thing. But the quality of our line was such a unique thing so maybe someone can animate, but it doesn't mean they could get our line quality right. And it's different to a Disney line, which is a strong line. So that's what we had to do. We had to see whether they could get our line right, which is such a bizarre thing when you're trying to interview someone, like, how good's your line? That's how we did it. We had to test everybody before they came in, and it was a very exhaustive process, and it was ongoing throughout the project. We didn't just hire everybody. Like, we had 80 animators working in Edinburgh at one time, but it was an ongoing process to try and get everybody because the quality was so high.
So, Justin, did you draw particular characters? Did you draw objects that would be in the background? What was your line test?
My job as an assistant is to really do that line drawing that Fiona was talking about. And I would work on whichever character got sent to me. So I worked on the illusionist, the main character. I worked on Alice. I worked on the barman in Mull. I worked on the boyfriend. I worked on various different characters. And I would receive the animation that had already been done by the senior animators. And depending on who the animator was, it could have been a really tight drawing to the actual character, or it could have been a really sketchy, rough approximation. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what I got, I had to then go over it all again and create that line. And like Fiona says, it's not a solid, strong line like you see on the Disney stuff, which is really obvious, or like kids' TV, really strong, bold lines. And it wasn't a loose, sketchy line. It was a fine, very slightly sketchy line. And there was almost no leeway. You had to get it right. And pretty much, I think everybody was given a month to try and get to that point where they could be left alone and not checked on every 2 hours to make sure that every drawing they've done is right. And it was hard. It's really hard to keep that line. And when you're just drawing and drawing and drawing and drawing, it's easy to lose a bit of focus. But
I would think you'd be fighting against your urge to think, well, if I were doing this, if I had designed this character, I would make it a little more like this or like that.
There is a little bit of that, but to be honest, it's more than your job's worth. with something of this scale, you can't. You have to put aside your own personal ideas, and you have to go with the character that's given to you, and you have to respect that somebody more senior than you has done this. And it's the same with any studio. You go to Disney, and they'll teach you to draw their way, and you have to do what they do. And with us, it was the same. We came in there, and we learned characters, and we learned a specific way to draw them.
But the thing about the way that we were doing it is that we were doing everything from scratch. Although Sylvain had made the triplets of Belleville, that was in Montreal with a whole different crew. And so we had to, like, when we're talking about this line quality, we had months, almost years of research about how to get that right. So for everybody, it wasn't like we had a studio set up and that we could all just kind of develop from there. This was really from scratch and kind of going like, okay, which is exciting because you kind of go, okay, where do we want this to go? And we have the freedom to be able to work out how we want this to develop. And that was a collaborative effort amongst all the different parts of our team, our the guys at the end of the line that are compositors. They needed to know how to do it. There's something called scan and paint, which is where everything comes together from where we digitize the actual drawing. But everybody had to be quite collaborative about how we make the process happen, how we make the end product. And so it just took an awful lot of research and development from the beginning, so which is kind of why our film took so long to make.
And it was 4 years?
It the actual production was about 4 years, but there was a whole bunch of stuff before, and, you know, kind of we finished it about a year and a half ago, but there's still, you know, there were still bits going on. So roughly 4 years, yeah.
It must be strange after all that to then think, okay, I'm on to my next project.
Yes, and you, especially for something for such a long time, you just, people become family, mm-hmm. you know. And for me, hiring everybody, and I just seem to hire people that I really like. And they just seem to be really talented artists as well. But
a lot of people would like to know your secret.
I just like a lot of people.
Fiona
She's
Hall.
Easily pleased.
Fiona Hall is production manager on the Academy Award-nominated feature film The Illusionist. Justin Hall is an animator on the project. It opens this week at Angelica Film Centers in Dallas and Plano. We'll resume our conversation with Fiona and Justin in just a moment. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. Jeff Whittington is here now. We're lucky to have, we didn't hire each other, but we like each other and get along. It's sort of a nice environment here in the building.
Yes, it is.
Jeff's mic is, for some reason, not turned up.
There we go. Yes,
don't
it
read
is,
anything and, into that.
And we're not married.
We are not.
No, we're not. Hey, Chris, there are just one
not
quick...
Not to each other, anyway.
That's right. There will be one Q&A. There will be a Q&A with Justin and Fiona Hall immediately after the 7 o'clock show at the Angelica Dallas on Friday and after the 8:05 show at the Angelica Plano on Saturday.
Oh,
so,
great.
You know, if you want to ask them a question you can't get through today or you just are catching part of this interview, you can go and actually see them speak after the films on Friday and Saturday in Dallas and Plano, and we'll put that information up on the website too. But right now you have an opportunity to respond to this conversation. What a great conversation. And I love how Chris gets to the process. And of course, we're going to have two more segments with our guests, and we're really thankful that they're here with us in studio today, and we appreciate their patience because they're also here waiting to hear from you at another number, 888-694-6931. They're waiting for you to, and we are all waiting for you to go to KERA.org and make your contribution to the station because this station actually runs on listener dollars.
Your dollars are more than half of the money it takes to keep KERA strong and healthy. We love to spend that money on the programming that you rely on every day. We're able to do it because of your generosity at 1-888-694-6931. Also, you can make a contribution online at KERA.org. It's not entirely unlike making a film in that I'm guessing to get this public radio station started, there was a big fundraising campaign and an effort, and people put that money in, and then along the way, more money comes in. Of course, we've been at this for decades, and it's much longer than 4 years. But your continued financial support is what makes us able to plan for the future, to know what we're going to be doing a month from now and 6 months from now and a year from now. That's thanks to your contributions at 1-888-694-6931.
Just like any business, the place you work, if you own a business or if you work in a company that has expenses or even your own household, the station has expenses that have to be paid so that the lights will come on, so that the transmitter will work, so that the microphones can get repaired if there's a problem, or we can get new headphones if we need new headphones. So those kinds of things have a cost, and you know we actually have to pay those bills or we can't operate. You know, when you tune in the morning and you listen to Morning Edition, know that Morning Edition comes as part of the NPR package, and our bill for the NPR package, KERA's bill, is over $1 million a year. Just to bring you the NPR programming that you hear every day on the station. So do your part at whatever level is right for you. If it's $100 or $200, it really does add up and it really does make a difference and help pay all of these expenses.
You can do this by setting up a sustaining membership, which is that monthly draw from your checking account or your debit account, or you can pay with a credit card or a debit card. We even still have available the ability for you to write a good old-fashioned paper check if that's what you like to do. You can call us now at 1-888-694-6931 to set that up, or go online to KERA.org where you can also check out all sorts of thank you gifts, including at just the $60 membership level, you could choose a Think coffee mug. Thanks again for your support at 1-888-694-6931.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are animator Justin Hall and production manager Fiona Hall. They were both working on the film The Illusionist, which is now Academy Award nominated as Best Animated Feature. The film opens this week at the Angelica Film Centers in Dallas and Plano. They will have a talk following the show at the Angelica Dallas on Friday. That's the 7 p.m. show. And then on Saturday evening, the 8:05 show in Plano. There will be a discussion after that. So if you'd like to meet the Halls, ask them questions that you don't ask today during the show, you can certainly do that. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372. Let's go to Ken in Plano. Hi, Ken.
Yes, hi. I wanted to say that I saw the trailer for this picture, and I'm telling you, you could pick any frame and hang it on your wall. It is so beautiful. And I wanted to say that I can't say that about the Toy Story movies, as great as they are. And I was hoping you all could talk about your intentions here, you know, bringing beauty back to animation in a 3D world, no less. I mean, the timing is really interesting. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
You know what? That is so exciting to us because we feel the same way, that we don't want to make cartoons, mm-hmm. you know, and it was so exciting for us to be able to make a film about our hometown, apart from one thing. And, you know, you're right. Technically, I do have those frames on my wall. I shouldn't do. But you're right. We wanted to create something beautiful, and Sylvan wanted to create something beautiful, that it wasn't just about let's make a cartoon, or like it was about bringing beauty back, and the not just the scenes, but the form of animation, the form of 2D animation, it's an art form, and it's about creating something, you know, technical and beautiful, and you know, we're so grateful that people love the look of the movie, because we did too. When we first saw the first shot, we went, oh my goodness, this is amazing. You know, we loved it as well. So it was kind of a beauty for us to create as well.
Can you talk, Justin, a little bit about the color palette? Because it's somewhat muted, but it's not sort of watercolor faint. Would you talk about the choices that were made about how the colors would be?
To be honest, that's not really my department, but what I can say is that the art department, who is led by a fantastic, I believe Danish artist, he took that and created what I think Sylvan really envisioned, and did such an amazing job with it. And the thing, the colors are beautiful, absolutely beautiful, and it's not. It's not, I mean, you say it's muted, and no, it's not in your face, but it's just an amazing color. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to describe it any better. But the thing that really stands out is the way they captured the city and the way they captured the light in the city.
Talk about that. So you both are from Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. Would people who live there now recognize absolutely particular locations in the film?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the locations that were chosen were very specific, mm-hmm. obvious locations, like the main street, Prince's Street, that gets used. The department store they use is a very famous department store called Jenner's. It's kind of like the Harrods of Scotland, or it used to be. And then just the city in general. I mean, it hasn't changed a lot since the 60s.
Changed a lot in 300 years.
No, that's true. That's true. It hasn't changed a lot. There's more traffic.
Things like anybody, you know, in Edinburgh will know that we used to have trams in our city, and we are getting them back. Our esteemed council decided we would get them back, which is costing millions of pounds. So everybody in Edinburgh would be looking at the, you know, kind of our film, kind of going, huh, there was tram lines in the 1950s. And why are we getting them back again at the cost of millions? So anybody in Edinburgh would totally get the kind of irony of that.
Yeah.
But and the other thing is the church where we got married is in the film.
Oh, like, wow.
So it's a really personal film for us. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know, it's the places where we go. But you're right. There's everywhere, around every corner is a place where someone from Edinburgh or someone who's been to Edinburgh would recognise. And, you know, again, that's just lovely. Things like there's a scene in the film where a tatty runs into a cinema. And that is a really beautiful classic old cinema called the Cameo. And that's like you know, that's where everybody goes to see their movies. It's like they're just places where we live. So,
and there's a film, an actual film clip in just that one part. Is that a Jacques Tati film?
It is. It is. You know, I think it's from Jeux de Fête or Playtime. I can't remember exactly.
It's either Jeux de Fête or Mon Oncle.
Maybe Mon Oncle. But yes, that is an original Tati movie. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was. I mean, that's one of the things itself. I wanted just to kind of have that juxtaposition between live action and animation. It was kind of. Mm-hmm.
That's a nice scene, really, because I'm not sure who animated that specifically, but the way they captured exactly what's going on screen, and they transposed it onto the Tati character in our movie. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of like a mirror image. It's just a nice little neat homage to his work.
My understanding is that two different lead animators dealt with the Tati character when he was on stage or performing his magic act and when he was off. Is that about the different way that a performer moves?
I think that is a big part of how Sylvain wanted to tackle the differences that individual animators have, but also the different nature of the person of the illusionist. Mm-hmm. Because his stage persona is, you know, this kind of magician who can do anything. And also that's part of the story, that on stage he is something else to what he is behind stage, you know, yeah, behind the scenes. So that was part of kind of what Sylvain was trying to capture there, of like, he has this pink sparkly suit, you know, it's a different person on stage, whereas the guy that you see behind the scenes, like I think probably in most kind of entertainment, you know, it's a different persona. So yes, it was a different animator who had a slightly different feel to how they were doing it. I don't know whether it was deliberate, but you know, there was someone who did the silly drunken Tati, and the silly, you know, there was someone who did the walking Tati. It was just a different, I don't know how he chose the person to do each one.
Well, there's such a poignancy, and we haven't really talked too much about the plot and how it develops, and we won't, you know, spoil the end for anybody, but essentially this teenage girl, Alice, really just almost believes that his magic is real, right? And she takes him on as a sort of father figure. Were there any concerns that without dialogue, a 60-something-year-old man and, I don't know, what is she, 16-year-old girl who moved to Edinburgh and lived together in an apartment would seem inappropriate?
I think it
does seem inappropriate, doesn't it?
I mean, it's very clear from the film that there's nothing going on, and yet there's still that, there's something about it that, you know, tense up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think in some ways, Sylvain wanted a little bit of ambivalence, not because it was implied or anything, but just the relationship with, and the intention is that it's a daughter figure and someone that he could relate to. But you're right. I mean, that's the whole thing about, you know, dialogue. It's like, how do you convey something without actually being able to say the words of, you know, what to do? So, yeah, I mean, it was definitely a challenge to be able to portray that in a way that was the way that we wanted it, which was the challenge throughout the whole film. How do you say things without saying them?
I have to say, the thing that initially frustrated me the most about the film, as I thought more and more about it, I came to really like it more and more. And that's the fact that there are no close-ups on our characters' faces. And first of all, as I came to really be much more interested in this, it struck me how much we've become accustomed to this convention of storytelling, to the extent that we don't even notice anymore, that maybe a close-up has less impact than it used to because we know one's going to happen when we're supposed to be paying attention. And the other thing was that you get this sense that you're almost leaning in a little bit. You want to know, and I saw it on a small screen because I saw a preview copy, but you want to know what's going on in their minds, but you never quite can. You're always watching from a bit of a distance.
And that's something that's very common in Tati's filmmaking. It very much long shots and wide shots and never getting close in. But for what we were doing, I think that was a big challenge, because one, it creates more work for an animator, mm-hmm, because there's a lot more going on. But also trying to portray that, like I was saying before, trying to portray emotion and kind of thought processes and the character from a distance is a lot harder. And I think with long shots, you can make something look wonderful. But like you're saying, you're always kind of, what's about this person? What's really going on in their head? And because you can't see their facial expressions very well, you definitely can't see their eyes. And I think the other thing on that level is he's an illusionist, mm-hmm. and he's doing magic tricks with his hands. And where's the excitement if you can't really see his hands?
Yeah.
But I think the way that it was tackled was done right. And I think we haven't lost anything at all from going that route.
I've got to tell you, though, sometimes we were so frustrated. We're like, why can't we just put a close-up of this is what he's thinking? But you're right. I mean, as Justin says, that's how Taddy made his movies. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at the Taddy movies going like, what? Where are the close-ups? We did exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. But we wanted the feel of a Taddy movie as well. But, you know, when you're doing animation, you just have to bring everybody into the scene at the same time. And it was a big challenge for the animators because everything has to be constantly moving. And, yeah, we were equally intrigued by that.
Did everybody have sort of an assignment to go back and watch the canon of Taddy films?
Yes. Everybody, there's Taddy film. There was Taddy all over the place. Our studio was a really interesting place. It was just Taddy everywhere, and our characters are everywhere, and our animators were characters themselves. They're unusual folk animators. So yeah, our studio was just full of reference material and Edinburgh Inside and Out, and we were our studio was on pretty much the main street in Edinburgh. So you just had to walk out the door and see one of the character, you know, one of the things from the movie. So, you know, there was just, our movie was everywhere.
So you can't escape it, which I guess can be good and bad, depending
yeah.
on the mm-hmm. on the week. My guests this hour are Fiona Hall, production manager, and Justin Hall, animator on the film The Illusionist. It's been nominated for an Academy Award for Best Animated Feature and opens this week at the Angelica Film Centers in Dallas and Plano. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can do so by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. We will resume our discussion about The Illusionist in a couple of minutes. Right now, though, this is the perfect time when it is just Jeff Whittington and me mm-hmm. saying things that are not all that interesting. You can surely break away for 2 or 3 minutes, long enough to go online to kera.org or to call 1-888-694-6931.
Well, Chris, the great news is, and I believe in that Jackie Boyer, our membership pledge control specialist down the hall, our producer for the membership campaign, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we got yet another Friends membership.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. That's
yes,
great.
We got two more. So we got
so
three
now we're
total.
Over the $400,000 mark.
So
awesome.
We've had two. We've had two Friends memberships come in during Think Today. Thank you so much to each of you, but also thanks to the other folks who helped us get over the $400,000 mark raised. $400,367 has been raised so far, and that is so fantastic. Our goal is $700,000, but now it's less than $300,000 to go, and that can happen in a couple of days if you'll go ahead and make the call to 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. Be in the close the drive vanguard, win the drive vanguard by making your contribution today.
For a second, I thought you were just going to say close the drive van, like there's some mystery machine barreling through North Texas and people are throwing money at us as they pass by.
Maybe that's a good idea.
Be a good little field trip for
meetings.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. If you try not to miss this show, if it's part of your day, maybe you podcast it because you can't listen right in the middle of the day at work, your support of this program really does help to keep it going. It, you know, quite frankly, you know, it helps to pay Jeff's and my salaries and Betsy Lewis's salary. It helps to pay our fabulous award-winning news team. They are here all the time. They were here yesterday when the weather was terrible, and hopefully you were home safe and warm. They help to pay for the national programs that you listen to here that are produced elsewhere, but brought to you every single day from around the country and around the world when it comes to the BBC programming. Your support makes it possible at 1-888-694-6931 and at kera.org.
And, we'd absolutely die on this program without Post-it notes or the generic equivalent of Post-it notes, whatever it is.
Post-it
we
notes
get.
And cough drops. That could be like the country song that sums up our...
And in complete, complete transparency, Chris, our cough drops have been, they were provided by the Fort Worth Opera. because they had like an overabundance of cough drops like a year ago.
But at some point, that'll run out.
That's right. We will have to get some cough drops eventually. But we wouldn't survive without paper clips and Post-its and things like that, too. I mean, all the stuff you need to run an office, as well as a radio station, as well as all the stuff you got to pay for, it all has to be paid for.
That's right. And you can help by sending a little bit of money. Maybe for you, a little bit of money is $500. Maybe for you, a lot of money is $50. But that's what you choose to do because you love public radio. The amount of this really is up to you. But your support is critical at 1-888-694-6931. Also online at kera.org. Do you keep like a mental list of the guests that come in and leave with like a big pocket full of cough drops?
There have been a couple, right? Have there?
There have been a couple.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Or they're always like, I'll just take some of these.
Well, I mean, that's what they're for. You know, we have, and when we get the studio ready in the morning, we make sure that each guest has hopefully a sharpened pencil and a pair of headphones that works.
The least we can
do. My number one concern is, do the headphones work? And then there's some cough drops, because, I mean, I go through the cough drops, especially this time of year. But no, I've never noticed the guest with the pocket full of cough drops.
I mean, one or two is fine. But anyway,
you guys can have as many cough drops as
you want. I know
the
halls are like, oh no, right. Are we not allowed to have a cough drop? They're really sitting in here with us.
There's a whole bag over there.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. And you can also make a pledge of support at kera.org. Thus far, we have raised $400,367. Your support will add to that. You know, the next time we do a total, you can think, hey, I'm $100 of that. I'm $1,500 of that. Your support really is critical. And we only come to you to earn the amount of money we need to keep going. We're not making a profit here. We're a not-for-profit. We're a community-based, community-owned, community-run organization, which we love because it allows us to serve you quite directly.
And you're the only people that we are trying to please. You know, we're not worried about a major sponsor worrying about KERA coverage of some issue. We're worried that you get what you need. You hear the stories and the news and information that you need to make your decisions on this radio station. And that's why it's fine for us to ask you to call 888-694-6931. That's why we're A-OK with asking you to make a contribution of dollars online to the station at kera.org.
If you've already done so, we would love it if you would use whatever social media you use, even the telephone. Let your friends know. Maybe your good deed will influence them to do the same. Thanks for getting in touch with us at kera.org and at 1-888-694-6931.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are animator Justin Hall and production manager Fiona Hall. Their film is called The Illusionist. It's an Academy Award-nominated feature film. It's an animated film. It opens this week at Angelica Film Centers in Dallas and Plano. Now, Friday, after the 7 o'clock show at the Angelica in Dallas, there will be a Q&A with Justin Hall and Fiona Hall. On Saturday, after the 8:05 show at the Angelica Plano, there will be a Q&A after that show in Plano, and you can check that out and find more information at the Think page of kera.org. If you want to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So I was so excited. I brought the DVD home and watched it with my kids, who are a little bit older, but they loved it. But I'm curious, it's rated PG. Is this a kid's movie or is this an adult's movie that's in a format that people associate with children's entertainment?
I think very much you hit it on the head with that. It's not targeted at kids. It's not specifically targeted at adults either. It's just generally it's a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a general movie that could have been made live action, could have been made animation. The medium isn't really the important thing. It's just a movie that's telling a story. And it is maybe a pity, I suppose, that everybody associates animation with kids. And there's very little out there that isn't directed at kids. I mean, if you look at everything else that's up for the awards, it's all kids' movies.
Yeah.
The Disney stuff, the Pixar stuff, DreamWorks. It's all aimed at kids. And sure, they throw a little bit in there for the adults to keep them entertained, Some do it better than others. But no, it's just using animation to tell a story, just giving it a different lease of life, I guess.
Yeah, it really is surprising. Do you think that having an animation category actually hurts the perception of film? Because so often it is the Pixar, and nothing against them, and they do some great work, but mm-hmm. it's almost like best kids movie is what the category it turns into.
It is a little bit, yeah, I think so. I mean, there's been movies that have been up, like I think Waltz with Bashir was up.
That's an amazing film.
Yeah. It is an amazing film, but it's definitely not a kid's movie.
Right. Your movie would not be inappropriate for kids to watch. That one would, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah,
you don't want a child to see that.
Don't let your kids see that. That's got some pretty traumatic stuff in it. Mm-hmm. But no, The Illusionist, I think, is fairly general. And maybe the younger kids won't appreciate it because the pace is different. You know, it doesn't have the excitement and the fast action and the peril and all that kind of stuff that Disney and Pixar and DreamWorks put in their movies to keep the kids' attention. But that, like I said, that's not what it's going for. It's trying to tell a story.
Fiona, did that present any challenges in raising the funds it took to get this movie made, just to at the gate sort of explain what you were trying to do?
I think it did. I mean, I wasn't the person who got the money. Our producer did a great job of went to Pathé, and they got the idea. Uh-huh. I think for them it was such a perfect fusion of two people that is held in such high esteem in France, in with Tati and Chaumet. But so France has got a different kind of idea about kind of the perception of why you're making a film.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just in terms of if you're going to make anything and an independent filmmaker, when you're trying to make something that's a bit unusual, that doesn't fit into a category, then you're up against it already. If you go and pitch something that is, okay, it's about a hero and a heroine and they're going to get together in the end, then you can kind of make it. But when you've got something that's unusual or the style's a bit different or, yes, in these financial times, then that is an issue because people just want to make money. So I mean all credit,
if you get some art out of it in the end, great, but
exactly, yeah. I mean all credit to Pathé, they wanted to make a good film, mm-hmm. and they allowed us a lot of freedom to be able to do that, but yeah, you know, people are hard to make money in movies.
So you had a French director, you're working in Edinburgh, you said you had people from all over the world. What was the lingua franca in the studios? Was it English?
It was a lot of English, but a lot of French as well. Mm-hmm. So by the end of it, if you didn't know enough splattering of French, then you know you obviously weren't listening hard enough. But we Spanish, we had a huge Spanish contingent. So yeah, you know, I was kind of trying to learn Spanish on the side as well as my little bit of French and a whole bunch of languages, which was so much fun. And we used to have kind of international days where we'd try and, you know, pick up each other, you know, little bits of each other's cultures and stuff. And it was a great studio to work in for just all these different, you know, kind of, it turned out those stereotypes are true. The Germans are really hardworking. The Spanish are kind of laid back. The French are a little bit kind of hee-haw. They really are. Like, you know, we just kind of proved every time. The British are just, we just drink tea. Like, you know, if there was a chance to drink a cup of tea, us Brits were there. Like,
so what do you think about the stereotypes about Texas? You all had both been here before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd been here for a week before we came here.
And that's all?
That's it. Uh-huh. And I'd been to the States occasionally. Like this, I really wasn't, I really hadn't come to the States.
Like you'd been here on vacation. Sort of thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like I'd been to the, but I'd really kind of not seen very much at all. I think the stereotype of just the friendliness is so true. They're just some of the friendliest people I've ever met, and just people talk to you. You know, you just go. We go out walking a lot, mm-hmm. and people are just, "Hi, how are you?" And I'm going,
"Is it off-putting?"
No, it's because nobody expects to see anybody walking.
That's true. I love it. I love it. I just love talking to people and just finding out, you know, so what do you think? You know, and yeah, I think it's great.
And Americans love nothing more than a foreign accent, because then there's a million, right? Is that your instant entree? Like, where are you from? And then they tell you who else they know from there.
Yeah, yeah.
And ask if we know them. Yeah, you know, there's 500,000 people in Edinburgh.
We've really enjoyed being here, and we've just, you know, within a couple of weeks, we could stay at some friends' houses across the road who didn't know us, and just things like that was just so kind. We mm-hmm. just found people really generous, kind of generous spirited, and that was great. If you're going to move somewhere, you've got to move somewhere where people are nice, and Texas has just totally proved that to us.
What's the climate like for the filmmaking industry?
It's here in Texas?
Yeah.
It's great. That's one of the reasons we came over here, was just to check out the industry over here. And we knew that Texas had a big film industry here in Dallas and down in Austin, obviously, with people like Robert Rodriguez and Richard Linklater down there in Austin.
You did Beautifilm, excuse me for interrupting, at South by Southwest, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Mm. I was part of the minuscule team that created Monsters, mm-hmm. which came out Halloween weekend last, opened last year at last year's South by Southwest. It hasn't seemed to have done quite so well over here as it did back in the UK. It's gone wild in the UK. Everybody loves it. But I guess, I don't know, that kind of creeps in on one of Fiona's earlier answers about independent filmmakers. You know, if you need to make money, take a good idea. And that's what happened with Monsters. A great idea was taken, and perhaps careless, perhaps gutsy production company in Vertigo Films gave us a bunch of money and sent us to Central America to run around like lunatics for 2 months. It was great.
Do you each have a favorite, as we conclude this, a favorite scene that you could watch 1,000 times in a row and just never get tired of looking at it?
In The Illusionist or in any movie?
In The Illusionist. let's limit it to The Illusionist, today's discussion.
Oh, I don't know.
I love the scenes on Mull. Mm-hmm. They're some of my favorite, partly because I know whenever I see the movie, I just associate it with the people who made it. So I kind of see those people. But also there's kind of Kaylee dancing, you know, kind of all the Jake dancing. And just that it was the combination of all together when we put the music onto it and the scenery. There's a bit where it kind of comes into the mountains, and I just love it. That's what our country looks like. That's where we live. And I just kind of like, man, That's home, but also it has the beauty of our film in it as well, you know. So I just, I love that. I could watch that.
What about you, Justin?
Yeah, I think anything which shows the city off is great. Mm-hmm. But there's one particular scene where Teddy comes back from a night out drinking, and he comes back to the hotel, and just the way he doesn't trip over the guy cleaning the stairs, I think is great. I love that.
Well, it's been so good to have you both here, and we understand that you are KERA folks.
Absolutely.
In your 2 months here, you've become listeners, which is lovely.
You know what? It's so exciting for us to be here because, in the 2 months that we've been here, we're not really TV people, and the only station we have on is KERA. Like, we just have it on constantly. So, you know, and especially, you know, with the drive that you're having, if I could encourage anybody just to support you guys, because we're just here. We have been here 2 months, and we're going to support you guys because we want to as well, because we just think you're such a good station. And we love the fact that you can get the BBC with your station. We just
late at night, but yes.
Late at night, you know, but we just would encourage anybody, you know, we just think you're great.
Well, that's very kind of you. You guys have been great. Thank you so much for spending this hour with us. We really appreciate it.
It's been really good. Thank you.
Justin and Fiona Hall worked on the Academy Award nominated film The Illusionist, which opens this week at Angelica Film Centers in Dallas and Plano. If you go to the Think page of KERA.org, you can find links that will tell you about the talkbacks, the Q&As that they will have after two of those screenings on Friday and Saturday. The Friday night screening is the one in Dallas, and the Saturday night one that will feature the Q&A is the one at the Angelica in Plano. What a neat couple. What a great film, and such an interesting conversation.
What a great conversation, Chris. And they've relocated to East Dallas area here in town, and what a small world. You know, wish them the best of luck with the Academy Award nomination, too. That's really exciting. We'll be watching, I'm sure, to see if our guests win the award. You know, these are the kind of conversations you hear every day on this show, and many of you have supported the station Almost 3,700 people have supported the station during this membership campaign, Chris, for a whopping $400,937 that's been raised. Thanks so much to each of you, especially Macy Shams in Arlington, Anna, is it Beckett?
I think Bacow or Beckett.
Bacow and Harvey and Barbara
Gallman
in Dallas.
Thank you.
Thanks so much to each of you. Wow, we'd love to thank you. When you call 888-694-6931, when you go online and contribute at kera.org, don't leave it up to these other folks, these great folks who've done their part for public radio, for your public radio. They're paying the bill so that you can listen to the station. If you have yet to contribute, let us know why. I'd really like to know why. You can email us at thethink@kera.org, or you can email me at jwhittington@kera.org. And let me know why you're waiting to contribute, because it's a great station. Even if I didn't work here, I'd listen all the time. Even if I didn't work here, I would support the station. Our guests are going to support the station. We really want you to join the list of supporters because it's worth it.
1-888-694-6931 is the number. You can also go online to kera.org. You know, it's funny. There may be other things that you don't choose to support in your life. You know, maybe there. Jeff's having a cough drop right now.
A cough sweet.
Maybe there are, things that you don't want to, businesses you don't want to patronize or things that you don't choose to eat or whatever. But then you don't, you know, if you don't want to give your money to a certain establishment, then you don't use it all the time, you know? Think about that. If say you don't eat meat, you don't give money to the butcher, so you don't eat meat. But you don't. Now the metaphor is kind of crumbled. Mm. But you know what I'm saying. Yeah. You're listening to the station. You're listening to it 15 days into the membership campaign, and still, you love KERA. You love public radio, and you're thinking, "Gosh, I hope all those other people get with it and send some money in, so the drive will be over." You know what? They're all thinking the same thing about you. So just. You know, stop the messing around. Go online to kera.org.
It's Mother Chris talking. It sounds like somebody's
you
mother.
You, too, are not having any dessert until
stop
the
messing
floor
around.
Is picked up. Knock it off. It's true. Everybody else out there is sort of secretly hoping that everybody else will make contributions. And you know, that sort of gets us nowhere.
Yeah, I listen all the time. Gosh, when's the drive going to end? Well, have you contributed? Well, no. Well, why not? The drive, and that's the big secret. The drive ends for you when you give to the station. And it really will be, I mean, people do say all the time, it's like having knee replacement surgery, right? You put it off because it's going to hurt and the rehab's going to be horrible. But I'm telling you, to a person, Chris, every person that I know who's had knee replacement surgery.
Jumping around and waving the crutches and so happy.
Are saying, I wish I'd done it sooner. Mm-hmm. You'll probably feel that way when you finally give in and give some money to the station because you have been listening. You have been realizing great benefits of using and utilizing this content day after day, maybe for years. So please do your part. Please come on over to the side of the people who have made the station possible for you to use it and make your call to 888-694-6931. Make your online contribution at kera.org. We have heard from a few folks, Chris, during the show today who joined or renewed their Friends membership.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's a $1,500 annual gift. If it's time for you to do that, this would be a great time to do it by calling 888-694-6931 or do it online at kera.org. If it's time for you to renew your annual $150 membership, this would be a great time to do that at 888-694-6931 because when you do that, it comes out of the total that's left for us to raise on the air and we can wrap this drive up that much faster.
Again, you can go online to kera.org and you can check out thank you gifts there. Now, we know a lot of you choose not to take a thank you gift and that just essentially means that more of your money goes into programming. But I also know some of us are just wired that if you're going to make a donation somewhere, you want something back. And you know, we make the argument that the something back is radio, but if you want a thank you gift, if this would motivate you to take this step, by all means, take a thank you gift. We're happy for you to choose whatever you like.
Mugs, tote bags, books, you name it. There's plenty of stuff that we'd love to be able to thank you with, but you have to make that possible when you support 90.1 KERA Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, online all the time at kera.org. It is your source for NPR news and information, and it's your source for The Think Show. So please call 888-694-6931 or do it online at kera.org.
Yeah, you know, Think is only heard on KERA. It is only supported by people who listen to KERA. So it makes your support really important. You know, there are, we don't have 50 other markets, you know, chipping in to keep this show on the air. It's up to you. We know how many of you love the show. We know how many of you download the show on the podcast, like tens of thousands a month. So if you can send a few dollars to help defray the cost of producing the show, we are eternally grateful. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number, or you can go online to kera.org. Hope to hear from you soon. Thanks.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.